Alrighty.
This is another Winter Death episode of Sitting in the Sock. Socking.
Sit up.
So,
I'm Kyle. Talk louder than that, Joe.
Kendrick's gonna drive.
This is Kendrick testing out the traction control.
Joe's gonna be in the back seat.
Yay!
Yeah. Screaming for his life.
Very brilliant,
Joe. Joe, okay, you didn't buckle up and all the doors are open, right?
Of course.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So today the topic that we're going to, or I'm going to introduce, and we'll see how far we discuss, is how certain aspects of a story can be ignored based on the type of media that they're being, like, portrayed through. Like, and how about an original story as well? Like, if you just watch a movie, how there's assumed things within that story that happen, then you're just okay with it, and sometimes you're not okay with certain assumed things, like certain types of character development, etc. So, I guess originally, I thought of this when I was watching, I think it was like Star Wars or something, where people were talking about how something wasn't developed, or they could have done something in the movie, and like, you never saw Maw give the lightsaber to somebody, or like, you did, because you did, but it was something like that, where you missed this minute piece of information that could have been easily assumed to have happened.
Sure.
But it was super important to certain people. And then I started thinking about other stories, other movies, where like, and the difference between a book and a movie, where books have the time to sit there and be like, yeah, he picked up his cloak afterwards. But a movie may not assume that,
It might break up the flow to go through and show all of the interstitial, assumable scenes.
Yeah, and that's something that a movie has to do. So it kind of goes into this discussion maybe about, I'm forcing it into, why certain ways of developing a character are okay and certain relationships aren't okay. Like, what was it we were watching and the characters weren't as well developed, the interactions weren't as well developed, so we didn't care as much, or you did care more because they were.
Let's see, the last few movies we watched, was it with Wooly there?
I don't remember.
Okay. I can't help you.
I know.
So all we watched together was Catching Fire.
It was something about like how you're supposed to care about this character, but you like just can't care about. It was maybe like,
was it PETA in the?
No, I think it was a Star Wars thing actually. Cause
oh, really?
It was like how you didn't get enough interaction between like Kylo and his dad or something, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I should care about this because they didn't spend enough time dwelling on it.
Right.
Right. Oh no, maybe it was Anakin. That's what it was.
Ah, here you go.
It was Anakin and his interaction with Padme leading him to get Palpatine's help.
Right.
And how people will say that, like, oh man, they should have spent more time on that. But there's other movies that have done something like cursory, and they've been okay just because other aspects of the movie were better, I guess. And so it kind of made me think about which things you really want to focus on when you're telling a story. Like, what is the best thing to focus on when you're in a movie and you're like, okay, these are the five things we have to develop. How do we best develop these five things? How do we make sure that this character is whiny, this character is overly passionate about a certain thing, that he's, you know, easily changeable, like he changes opinion easily, etc. But does that kind of make sense? Like,
yeah.
Those aspects,
well,
Joe?
I'm picking up what you're putting
okay.
Out. I would say that it's the biggest difference between that, especially when you're talking about crossing media, is that Pace is one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
Because you can forgive an astonishing amount of bad pacing in a book.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. Like, if a book is moving kind of slow, it doesn't bother you as much. When a movie's moving kind of slow, it's like, oh, my God, I'm going to die before we get to the end of this movie. And I don't know that I care anymore either. And I'm trying to think of some good examples now. I know there are out there of badly paced movies. And let's see, what was one we were watching the other day that was just like, this pacing is awful.
I know. I feel like I'm there with you, because I remember like a movie that we saw the other day where it was like really fast and then stopped, and like, I don't know,
bored.
Well, I think it was another Star Wars thing, because we were talking about the pacing at which the prequels go, where you're like, here's an action scene, and then like an hour of politics, and then like another action scene, and you're like, maybe you can like make
solid
them
15
more like.
Yeah, that's one thing. Yeah, that would be one. I just recently watched episode 3. I still have to catch the other two again. I haven't watched them through an adult lens, which is where you put porn on it, right?
Yeah, you just imagine everyone naked, but instead of, like, it giving you confidence, you just masturbate.
Is that the adult way, or is that really more the teenage way?
I don't... Yeah. So, well, you're asking questions to a
not very charismatic Rick and Morty. But I would say that episode 3 definitely had some pacing issues in that sense, where it was like stop and go. It was like bad traffic. You're just gunning it, you know, flying down the road and then slamming the brakes, and then you're like, what is going on? And I felt like I had to stop a couple times to be like, what is happening right now? Like, what do I even care about? And that's usually a sign, I think, of a really bad movie. When you see a really terrible movie is when the pacing is so off that you spend a lot of your time stopping and being like, what the hell is happening right now? Like, what am I watching? What's going on? What are these people doing?
And it becomes, abrupt. Like, there's shifts in story that can happen, and you are okay with them because they don't feel as jarring. And there's a movie that came out called The Visit. It was the movie about the kids visiting their grandparents. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah.
Actually really good. I'm not going to talk about spoilers. I'm just... the plot. Spoilers.
Yeah. M. Night Shyamalan. Spoilers.
It has a twist. I'm going to let you know right now. I know. I'm an asshole.
He already did the twist that there was no twist, right?
I don't know.
Okay. I thought I heard that he did.
He did the twist that he was going to make a good movie with Mark Wahlberg in it, and then he released The Crappening. And that was this, like, meta twist.
I thought that there was a twist once where there was no twist.
I don't know.
Was if he hasn't done that,
remember.
And that Shyamalan.
Get on that.
Get on that, buddy.
Give us money. I mean, that's not right.
He doesn't have any money for us, dude.
But it was good because it wasn't pacing necessarily, but I think story aspects and pacing can be.
Yeah.
Well, they did a good job of making it a horror comedy. So, like, and they transition hard but seamlessly.
I do like them horror comedies
where you're like, these kids are just having fun with their parents and their grandparents are doing weird shit, and it's like, oh, this is getting creepy. Oh, it's just, and it's like, it's a nice, like, flow. I'm doing wave motions.
He's making wave motions with his hands.
That flow is really good because it makes you kind of, like, not emotionally, like, oh god, oh Jesus, oh okay, I'm getting it, oh god. And then in the Star Wars movie you see that kind of thing happening because you're supposed to feel for Anakin, and then it just cuts off to, like, Obi-Wan doing something that has no emotional, like, relevance to what was happening with Anakin's character.
So you get to throw away your feelings for Anakin, which is fine.
Yeah, which is okay, unless you're trying to make me feel like Anakin is, like, a conflicted character and not just a bitch, and then you run into these problems that most people have.
Right. But what's funny is then you compare that to episode 7, and which has no pacing issues, I think. I felt like that one was paced very well.
Yeah.
So...
But again, if you couldn't tell, this podcast really likes episode 7. And if you don't like episode 7,
you can get out.
You can go back to Canada with your maple syrup and your mounted cops.
I don't think that they Canadians disliked it.
Your weed grown on the streets. And
we're still waiting to hear what China has to say about it.
Socialized healthcare and your no guns on people thing, except for when there's guns on people. And your trailer park people growing
still
weed. And... you making shows that make me feel like I could go to Canada and grow weed in a trailer park and not get in trouble. Okay, I'm good.
Good?
I feel a lot better now.
Okay. I don't know what Kyle has against Canada today, but there we go.
Yeah, apparently all of those things that he just mentioned.
Fair enough.
I'm not jealous. Stop saying that.
Okay. Toes. So that's pacing. There's other movies that do it well and do it bad. Are there other aspects of a movie that make it fall apart when compared with, say, a book?
Yeah, and I think that's the reason that they had to change The Hobbit so much.
And not
necessarily bad or good. I think that the Hobbit movies and book are both fine.
Well, I'm going to steer this some more.
No.
Because it's what I do.
You can't steer the car and the conversation. You'll kill us all.
No, I'm doing both of them. Whoa. We're actually moving really slow through traffic right now because I forgot to check the route. So I figured highway would be better plowed.
It is.
Than Wadsworth, because I figured Wadsworth would be... a cavalcade.
Wadsworth is a street that we use to get to work.
No, it's not. Wadsworth is a state of mind.
Oh, okay.
Wadsworth is a lane.
Wadsworth is a traffic-ridden scum of high villainy.
Yep.
Where you're pretty sure at every stoplight you might get mugged out of your car.
Yep.
Because there's so much
stoppage.
That's
not even really true anyway. But anyway.
Whatever.
So, point is, what I was saying was there are other aspects of a story that don't translate well into movies. And I would say one of them is excessive narration. In fact, narration in general tends to come across very awkward. And it can be done well, but it can also really not be done well.
Example of good narration, please.
usually it's only the very beginning of a movie you can get away with good narration. I'm now struggling to think of one. Usually you get away with more classic cinema. Joe?
What about the introductions to The Lord of the Rings? In the very first Lord of the Rings,
yes.
The narration by Galadriel was basically just to set the precedence of the history. That if you had not read the books before, sure. Or if you had no concept of the story, which going into the movie, you should always assume that this is not a story you've seen before.
But I guess intro narration doesn't really qualify to me as a narrated movie. Like, a narrated movie would be, like, okay. Similar to a Deadpool movie where they're, like, breaking the fourth wall.
I'll give you my example of one that's actually kind of weirdly done. I won't say badly, but I will say weirdly.
Okay.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The remake with Johnny Depp.
Damn.
It has this introductory narration which works kind of well. In that it's this, I forget the voice of the actor that actually does the narration for it, but he brings about the story, he introduces the plot and the scenario, what's happening, and then you never hear from him again, which is fine. He's introductory by that standpoint. Then they get to the end, and he does kind of an epilogue, but it comes out of nowhere. It's a little jarring. And then they give it. Like, they make the voice, like, suddenly they give it a body, and it's one of the Oompa Loompas, played by Dee Valley, like, sitting on a branch talking to you, the audience. And to me, like, that whole, for a movie that's already just kind of surreal by its own definition.
Sure.
That part was just like, that was weird. I don't know how I feel about that. So,
well, and what's funny about that movie is all of the dialogue is scene for scene identical to the book, as are the songs.
True.
Cool.
Which is one of the things that's funny that people, like, panned that movie and they had a lot of issues with it, but it's like, it's literally the most faithful reproduction of a book into a movie that's ever been done. And people didn't like it. And it's like, well, now you know why we rewrite shit. Like, it doesn't work.
There you go. That's exactly, I guess, the crux of this conversation.
I'm glad that Joe brought that up, because that movie, I love Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory, because Gene Wilder is an amazing human being.
Yes.
And if you've ever seen that movie, which if you haven't, pause the podcast, go watch it. We'll wait.
You'll see a lot of quotable lines that you didn't know were from that movie.
We'll wait.
I'm giving them motivation.
Shut up. Wait. Okay. Now you're back.
Okay. All right, yeah, welcome back.
Glad you watched the movie.
It's actually 4 hours later in real time as well.
Yeah, we waited.
We're hungry. The park?
That boat ride, man, right?
Good God.
So the best part about that, if you remember, I should have warned you before, when you first see Willy Wonka and he walks out of the factory, right, and he comes up all decrepit and then does that little routine, that was ad-libbed by Gene Wilder, and it was required in his contract that he get to do something like that. That was his only obligation. That was his rider. He's like, I get to do something like that. And everyone's like, okay.
Sure, dude.
Whatever.
Whatever you want to do,
whatever,
Gene.
Gene.
We're just happy to have you.
Because I believe at that time he was still hot shit. So that wasn't like the peak of his career, but he was definitely up there. So, but that movie, if you've ever read the original Roald Dahl book, that movie has almost like nothing to do with it. Because the original Roald Dahl book, everybody fucking dies. Like, there's actually horrible things happening. And then there's the sequel with the glass elevator, and there's all the other stuff. And they're kind of dark books. Roald Dahl wrote some dark, fucked up stuff.
Yeah. Like witches, dude. That book is a little bit terrifying. Man.
He's got some weird stuff in his head. But that movie, the second one, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, was a much more true to the imagery of the book, the imagery of Roald Dahl in general, the style he wrote in, and the dialogue was all the same. And the music, there's no music in the book, obviously, because it's a book. But there's the words to the songs are the same, and then who did the music for that was what's his name, that amazing composer,
Jonathan Franks.
No.
I don't know people's names, by the
that's
way.
Fine. That's
the
fine.
Podcast didn't know.
It's fine. He did. I need to know this stuff, but no, he's a big time movie composer. He's like a John Williams level. Big deal. And he did an amazing song with them, an amazing job with those songs.
Oh, yeah.
Is he a big deal in the Resistance?
No. He's not. He's just a big deal with music. this truck is rapidly invading my lane, and that bus is very much staying in his lane.
Oh, God.
So guys, this might be how we die.
It's like a tractor scene with buses.
Yes.
God, no.
We're getting bus to question here.
I
doubly busted question.
Oh, man, if we would have been in between those two buses that you guys can't see, we would surely not be doing this podcast.
The imagery is no, we'd be doing it as we die to the bitter end.
To the end.
One day they would find it. We need some feed style. I want to be really disappointed at how stupid it was.
The last one was like, oh, you guys, you died for this, and that was not worth it. No, you have to have some feed style thing that automatically updates.
I think it's like it's a difference between. You're talking about pacing, then we move to Charlie. Yeah,
so,
okay,
so this is where we're talking about narration, and I had something for this.
Okay.
I actually did have one in my back pocket. I've been sitting here thinking furiously.
It was definitely thinking.
wink. And what the narration example I was going to come up with was was it a Christmas story? Where the main character narrates the whole fucking way.
Yeah.
That's one of the times where it has worked, but if you were to make that movie now, it would be weird. I don't think it works with modern cinema. So I think that that's mostly an issue of perhaps how we changed it.
I think it depends on the scope of the story, because Stardust is done and it has some narration in it, and it's not bad.
That's true.
And so, like, it depends, I think, on the scope, though. Like, it has to be well done. I agree, Joe.
Yeah.
Like, but I think some stories...
Oh, what are we even doing? Oh, my God. John Wick.
Yeah!
John Wick. Why aren't we talking about John Wick constantly all the time?
Well, we can have a whole podcast on John Wick, but that movie does...
We will.
Does there narration in John Wick?
Yes.
I didn't even notice it. It's just so seamless.
Yeah, there is. Wow. Subtle. It's not that common, but it's in there. And the other part about it is the way they did narration wasn't as bash you over the head. Because it was that show up at the end. And then you're like, oh, this is me, here's what I do. And then I'm, you know, dying in an SUV now. And he didn't say that, but, you know.
Are you sure he didn't say that? Because it sounds like oddly close to say that.
So, you'll have to double-check that, but I'm pretty sure there's some narration in there.
Cool. If this is another movie this podcast thoroughly enjoys, is John Wick. So, if you haven't seen John Wick again, we'll pause
the podcast. Joe, you saw John Wick, right?
I believe I have.
Can't believe. It's Keanu Reeves' probably his best movie.
Oh, Joseph. No. Okay. I know of it. I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
No.
So, go home and watch it.
I'm very excited. I'm probably going to now.
Get out of the car.
I'm unlocking the books. And Joe's gone. And so it's just us now.
All right.
We'll be taking Joe's computer and pawning it for food when we get stuck in the wasteland of winter.
But yeah.
Oh, don't worry. It won't be anybody's.
We'll be taking our company computer and pawning it. It's not Joe's. Don't bother putting his name on it. He's dead.
He doesn't have a name anymore.
Yeah.
Well, so narration, I agree with. Narration's a way to affect pacing and make it weird.
Yeah. Well, it's not necessarily that it's directly related to pacing. It's just an example where in a book. Narration works really well.
There you go.
In a movie, it gets weird. Ah, Fight Club. God damn, we should have done some research on this. We could have done a lot better.
We don't do that here. We come upon things in stream of consciousness.
Literally while I'm cleaning snow off my car, yelling at you guys to figure out a topic.
I kind of wanted to go back to, like, even the different medias within a certain style.
Medias.
Like shooting. God damn it. He keeps cutting me off before words that sound very violent. Like, you're shooting.
Oh.
A show. A television show.
Oh.
Sorry. Weird place to pause.
Well, I'm...
Trying to get to the difference between, like movies and
how
television?
Lost does a very good job of building characters and doesn't make you feel like... I will admit this, even though I don't really like the show, that they do a lot of good character development. And in a movie of Lost, they would not be able to do it the same way. It would be very, very different
and
difficult.
Yeah, fine example, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and that...
I'm assuming everyone has at least seen it or is aware of it. The original deal was one movie per book.
I don't even think it works well as
and
a show per
the,
book with
yeah.
HBO, because it's almost
the,
not enough
season,
episodes.
Right?
Like,
yeah, and yeah, they cut it way down to fit it into a season.
If you've ever listened to the book on tape, I don't read, so that's what I'm going to refer to as reading. If you ever listen to the book on tape, you learn so much more about every character.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a fine example. As we run around here, there was... Oh, let me wrap up the Fight Club. Fight Club had narration.
Yes.
From a main character. And it was done really well,
mm-hmm.
because the whole thing was a point of view movie.
So a POV for those porn addicts over there.
We're all porn addicts here.
So you guys know what it is, but what if one of our listeners doesn't watch porn? What am I thinking? I'm kidding. Okay, we all watch porn and we're all our own listeners. Okay.
That's true. We're all masturbating in the stream of... Oh, okay.
Yeah,
gross.
Let's
anyway, so...
It sounds like some weird stuff you're doing.
So that was Fight Club. A fine example of other movies, of things from books that wouldn't necessarily work made into movies. We'll come back around to it. And what was the one you were just talking about? Which was
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones was originally a movie deal, and the creators are like, you're fucking kidding me. There's no goddamn way we can fit these into movies. So when they pitched it to to Georgie Boy, they suggested, I think, a mini series, and then it rapidly became like a full series, and then it was like, we're going to put a shitload of content out there, because it's, what is it, 12 episodes? And they're 40-minute, they're 40-minute episodes, I think?
Yeah, they're not, there's a lot, they're like full hour, like, time slot.
Yeah, they're just about full
things.
Hour, and they don't have commercials, because it's Hitchpeel.
So,
it's, yeah.
And that's an example, though, where a lot of the narration, and, okay, so in addition to narration, there's another aspect that's narration in movies, but not necessarily introspection in books.
Yeah, I was going to say introspection, like Die Hard does a lot of introspection where he's talking to himself. He's like,
right. He's
like, now I know what a TV dinner feels like, or
right,
like that
right.
type of stuff.
But that he's actually talking in that, so that's audio.
Oh,
that
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Joe,
okay,
gotcha. Word. Audio in the movie happening
in
the movie.
We always talk about this, and I always forget the name every time. I have to look it up. It's like...
Glad I don't get asked chemistry
Synecdoche.
Questions.
Synecdoche.
Is that what it is?
No.
I was like, wow, that was oddly...
Every time, like, I've actually been going out of my way to drill this into my brain.
Dialogue.
But it's the concept of...
It's the concept of sound being heard by... It's the difference between music being heard by the characters in the scenario... And the difference between the music being heard by simply the audience.
Okay. So, like, you have, like, your score versus, like, something actually playing in the movie.
Yes.
That's
so, like, when, if there's, like, sound
that
effect.
That Far Side joke when, like, the little raccoon's going through the forest. And he's like, he could tell that Mr. Fox was nowhere near because there was smooth jazz playing in the background.
Yeah. And so, that's there's a term for it. And
working on it.
I think it's Greek. So, oikos. Oikos.
Ouroboros.
Ouroboros.
Ouroborigmos.
Diegetic.
Diegetic. Told you it was Greek. Diegetic.
Damagetic.
Sound. Damagetic. Diegetic sound, which is where he's actually just mumbling to himself, right? As opposed to if we just heard his thoughts.
Okay.
What was that Chuck Norris Ninja something movie where he's... They did, like, the inner thought thing, and it was so bad.
Yeah.
He was like, ninjas, just. They're all dead.
Awesome.
He seriously had, like, the most ridiculous reverb, which just suggested that his head was, in fact, you know, empty
just
and hollow. Just
empty and echoey.
So is oddly accurate?
Sure.
I mean...
Chuck Norris, don't kill me.
I think Chuck Norris is marketing.
Sometimes I like
giant.
To stick my hand in the fire to remember that it burns.
And you know what? Chuck Norris would appreciate that.
But then he'd also kill you.
That's fine.
Because he doesn't necessarily have to appreciate
you. Sometimes
you
don't know the fire's going to kill you.
Sometimes you don't get to live just because Chuck Norris appreciates you. Right? Okay, that wandered off.
I didn't
off.
Say
that
you were spared.
Yeah, that wandered off a lot.
So you're talking about introspection.
Well,
I'm
trying to rattle off. I got a couple more ideas about things that work in books that don't
actually,
work in movies.
For a diegetic sound. Actually, there's something I want to address with that. And spoilers if you haven't seen first season.
Dude, we don't do spoilers.
Are we not doing spoilers?
For Game of Thrones,
Game
I think
Thrones?
Is off the list of spoilers. Because if you haven't seen the first season of Game of Thrones,
okay.
Fuck yourself.
Red Wedding.
That's not
that's
first
not
season.
The first
that's
season
like
of Game of Thrones.
That's like,
that fourth that's like the third or fourth
yeah,
or book.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just apologizing for not seeing
we're spoiling.
First
okay. So, let me be
that was
clear.
A test. And everybody
I don't think you should spoil the Red Wedding ever. Ever.
Well, no.
Ever.
I want to bring up just one small
thing. Oh, my God. Okay.
Okay. The diegetic sound. The Lannisters theme.
Yes. It's actually, he's got a good
Reigns
point.
Reigns of Castamere?
Yeah, the Reigns of Castamere.
I'll give this to him.
In that scene, like, we've become aware of the Reigns of Castamere as an audience because that's the Lannisters theme. It plays in the background while they're there.
It actually only plays a few times, but
it
yes.
It does, yeah.
But
it is established that is their song. And that makes that scene for the Red Wedding all the more critical when suddenly that sound becomes non-diegetic and the participant...
It is diegetic.
Or diegetic, non-diegetic. Yeah.
It is diegetic.
Diegetic. It becomes diegetic. And then suddenly Catelyn can hear it. She hears the music playing. The Starks all hear the music playing.
Good.
And suddenly
stop
shit
there.
Gets
real.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, stop there, yeah.
And anyway.
And it's a huge
so we'll
shift.
Stop. So what if I told you that originally when they were developing that, they were going to use the show's opening theme instead? Because the Reigns of Castamere, they weren't sure if people had it established in their head.
Enough. I think that as a fan, I would have been... Because they were doing it in the book, I think, right?
Well, in the book, they talked about it, but you don't know what those songs are they talk about.
Well, that has such a weird feeling to it, though. I'm just trying to.
But think, I think it was just going to be. It wasn't going to necessarily. What it was the tune. It wasn't necessarily. They weren't just going to play a recording of that.
No, I get it.
It was going to be played on the cello, and it was just going to be the opening cello line, basically. And that was going to be what the Reigns of Cashmere was, because they didn't really actually. You say that, but they didn't really do a great job of establishing that song before. I don't know if the audience had actually heard that song before that point. If they had, whether they realized it was the Reigns of Cashmere.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, as a fan, I really appreciate it because I took the time to understand that stuff, and I got really excited when they had actually wrote the song.
Yes. And so yes, when they put
the, so I liked it, but yeah. People who were just watching the show for the first time who don't follow it anywhere else but just watching it, I feel like any.
But then again, this is fantastic editing because they picked a song that was striking, and then the characters in the show made you feel the way you're supposed to feel. So there's a combination of good editing, good directing, and good acting, because you didn't necessarily have to know that song to know that that song was bad. Everyone else was already telling you that with their faces and their quickened heartbeats and their furtive glances.
Yeah. Or that they knew something was going to happen that you may not have seen.
And so you know.
Yeah, now you know that they know.
As a character. Now, here's a fine example. That scene works beautifully in cinema and any kind of visual thing, but that subtlety is extremely difficult to write.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what does that say? Catelyn heard the Reigns of Castamere, the song of the Lannisters.
Oh, I thought they did something like that.
I think they did.
But not like that, like blunt.
That's where it can be really tricky to do that. And that's where I have to admit I haven't got that far in the book series, but you can see where that scene could go different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's another bit. So that's an example of using diegetic music in a way that's difficult to do with books. Because you can't be like, the Lannisters theme plays. I wonder what's going to happen now. Probably the Lannisters. Like, I mean, it's...
Yeah. Probably. The Lannisters are happening. You're about to get Lannistered so hard.
Yeah. Regarded.
With regard to that, I know you have another one you want to get to, but...
Yeah, I've got quite a few.
The story changes that are necessary to make something... I mean, this is kind of overarching, but they do it in The Hobbit and they do it in Game of Thrones. Like, it's interesting to see... If you look at it that way, where you're not some kind of fucking horrible book hipster who's like, they didn't make my book into real life.
I will find you. And I will cut you.
I didn't do that exact scene that I wanted to see.
That scene wasn't how I imagined it in my head.
Yeah, and so like if you're not a horrible person, basically, and you respect the difference between different types
books
different types of media, and you are looking for the things that are different and trying to look at why they had to change it that way. Like, they had to change the Hobbit movies because they needed to be more interactive. You needed them to be more paced. You needed them to be paced
also,
better.
There's a big aspect about the Hobbit movies that's something I think a lot of people overlook, which is the Hobbit was written first. And none of those things, a lot like the original Star Wars, none of the things that we attached meaning to later had meaning in the Hobbit. When he wrote the Hobbit, the ring was just a magic ring. Sauron did not have an association with it. He even didn't have orcs. He called them all goblins. There were no orcs. Like, there are actually some huge gaping plot holes that, if they had just brought right in, would point out that Tolkien had huge gaping plot holes. And people were like, this movie sucks because it's got these gaping plot holes. And Peter Jackson would be like, it's from the book, mate. And so instead, he said, we're going to get creative here. We're going to tie in the future movies that we already made that never existed when The Hobbit was being written back into it, which is why I know a lot of people had issues with Legolas being there, but Legolas was from that place and that time. He would have been there.
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't named in The Hobbit because he didn't exist as a character in Tolkien's mind then. But in the lore, he's fucking there. He has to be there.
And kudos to them for doing that because they're taking into consideration their own canon and being like, this is relevant. We need to put this in here because
that works in that, like, there's never, like, a high-five moment between Bilbo Baggins and Legolas. Or, like, he rarely actually interacts with the elves, if at all.
And that's also part of, it works well with the original trilogy, where, like, he's there, but you never see him interact with Legolas. Like, you'll notice Bilbo and Legolas are never in the same room later, so you never get to see whether they had a high-five moment or not. Then, where you're like, oh, I remember you, or those little details. Like, they talk about, they put Gimli in, remember? He's got the picture of Gimli in his pocket. Yeah. That's not in Hobbit at all. Fuck no. Gimli's not a named character at all in the Hobbit. But he's got to be named. He's got to exist then, because he was alive during that time.
Yeah.
So it's things where Tolkien wrote himself in a corner, Peter Jackson kicked a wall down to make it not a corner anymore. So that's the part I absolutely adore, and that's a great example of an adaptation that made the story fit with how we have the story now.
Yeah, so, and I think they do that in Game of Thrones, too. They've changed stuff in Game of Thrones to bring in a character that wasn't there before, like the prostitute that Tyrion sleeps with right off the bat in the first episode. She's throughout the whole thing, and she actually plays a really important part later in the series, if I recall correctly.
Isn't she? She's not in the book?
No, she's not. She's not as a character in the book.
Oh, you're right. That's a different...
Whatever the fuck her name is that I hate now. But she used to be a porn star. Did you know that?
I know you
that. The one that that Tyrion like buys to go to
the one that he keeps?
The one that he keeps to
King's Landing. Right up until he doesn't?
Yeah. She used to be a German porn star.
Awesome.
And then she got into acting. Actually really good. I would suggest it.
Thanks for that.
You all watch porn. Just watch it.
Good to know.
Enjoy.
I'm gonna move away from porn.
Yeah, but anyway, like they had.
She's not in the book.
She's in the book, but the other prostitute that Tyrion sleeps with in the first episode.
Oh.
She's actually goes to like King's Landing with them and becomes this actually semi-important character at the brothel when she starts running Littlefinger's brothel.
Right.
And you're like, this character's not in the book at all, but they put her in there because she was an important character who needed to do something that drove a story point.
There were a couple of other interesting examples. I'm assuming anyone listening has seen or is aware of some Game of Thrones seasons. We'll skip over the Red Wedding in general, but Robb Stark's wife is not the same character in the book as she is in the movie, various issues in the show, and she doesn't die in the book. And then she goes on to do important things.
That's right.
And it's like, and so people watching, you're like, what's going to happen? What the fuck's going to happen now? Because it's like, because I guess she's supposed to save someone's life later, and so it's like, that's going to get dicey.
Yeah, and the whole search for, I think the whole search for Sansa is different.
Yes, Sansa, there's a Sansa double.
They never find, Brienne never finds either of them.
Yeah.
And in the show, they end up seeing, she ends up seeing Arya. Or she might not know she's Arya, I think.
She does save Arya. Remember, she tries. And then.
But that's interesting, because I want to see why they did that.
There's another example, actually. There's one I can tell you exactly. There's a Sansa double. Remember, there's someone who they tell,
that's right.
What's his name? That it is Sansa and it's not. And Sansa's in hiding?
Yeah. That's Littlefinger that tells
them. Yeah. Sansa, Littlefinger lies to Crazy Bones, and Littlefinger, absconds with Sansa and keeps her hidden for a while, and then they find her. But in the show, they straight up said, what's her name, that actress? People fucking love her, and they wanted to see more of her, and it wouldn't make sense to just throw a double, another actress in there.
Yeah.
There's already dozens of actors. They didn't want to throw yet another actress in there when people were already not liking how little they saw of Sansa before. Mm-hmm. So that was a purely, political, decision. Fan service, right?
Yeah.
But that's another fine example where, getting back into the beginning, adjustments to the canon to fit the media.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I like it most of the time.
It also gives us a fun thing with Game of Thrones, because we're not really sure what's going to happen next. I've watched it with Emily, who read all the books a long time ago and was all hoity and whatever, and then when there'd be something different, she's like, no, that's not how that happens. Like, guess what, bitch? You got HBO.
Yeah, you got HBO. They're going to do what they do.
And you have to learn to deal with that, because it might not be what you thought it was going to be. It might not be what it was. And that's fine. I love that. Same thing with, the Star Wars, which is where they're opening up a whole new world.
Butts and stuff like that.
That's, why is it all butts?
I don't know. I've been on a butt kick, because butts is a funny word to say.
That's fine, but the porn, the butts,
I don't know. Why is porn? I can talk about porn. What the fuck is the problem?
Just feels like we're just getting into heavy on the porn.
There's a lot of things that are coming up today that are about porn. When we talked about sex, there was lots of cheese stuff that came up.
I fucked up there by saying it again. That's on me.
Porn.
So porn is kind of.
What was your other point that you were going to make after the diegetic sound?
After the diegetic sound.
Diegetic.
The next part was actually there's two. I'm gonna say one real quick, and then I'm gonna finish on the other one. One is,
of course,
Tolkien is a fine example of this. He'll take 3 pages to describe a flower, and that flower is on screen for a half a second.
If at all.
The same effect. Yeah. Or no, you put it on screen for half a second, you get the same effect. Great example is describing the elf keep that I just forgot the name of because I'm an idiot.
Is Tirith? Is that it?
No, that's the other one.
See, this is my problem, right. Is I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about because I just forget the names and everything
like
all the time.
Isn't it like the Hidden Veil or something like that?
Yeah, the Veil. It's like,
is it the Veil?
Veil?
It's nope, where they go.
That's Game of Thrones again.
It's the Forest.
It's where they go when they like.
Anyway, what I'm talking about. No, not that one. The high town. That one. He literally spends, if I remember correctly, it's like a page and a half describing the wonder of it and how pretty it is. And instead, you just get one establishing shot of a pan across with CG in it. And it's gorgeous, and it achieves literally the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's a fine thing where Tolkien gets shots fired on him, and rightly so, for having shitty pacing. Because he will sit there in the middle of a battle to pause and describe something for like an hour and a half. And you're like, God damn it, dude. But when you're making a movie like that, you can pan across shit and cram all the same presentation and all the same exposition, basically, into 1 3-second camera pan.
Yeah.
That would take pages to read. So that changes your pacing, but it's also a trick where visual media has, you know, an advantage. Conversely, visual media has a disadvantage there, which is, and this is a fine example, I really need to go back and dig the book up so I can give you like a specific page reference and everything, but in Harry Potter 2, there is a scene where, I think it was Snape comes into the room with a long table and a fireplace on the end, and all the Death Eaters that are still in hiding, and the book describes a few of them, and then mentions that there's like, and that's what it does, it's selectively describing a scene. As you're reading it, you're imagining a table with some people sitting on it. Like, okay, cool. And then, in the book, it's the chair at the end of the table, which had been facing the fireplace, mm-hmm. Something happens. He says something, and it's got Voldemort in it.
You're like, what?
Right, but in the movie, framing that scene puts entirely too much emphasis on the shadowy chair, which was never mentioned in the book until it was relevant. But in the movie, you're immediately like, who's in the chair? Oh, fuck, someone's in the chair. Oh, Voldemort's in the chair. Like, you know that right away.
Yeah.
So they didn't film it that way. I have to go back and find the filming and see how they did it. I remember thinking, okay, that's a good way to do it. But that was where you had to make a change because the way the book was written, you cannot film that scene. You cannot have a selective scene. Like, you'd have to have, like, part of it blacked out. You're like, you don't know this yet. Shut up. There's nothing relevant here.
Don't watch this.
There's not going to be relevant.
Don't look behind the curtain.
But see, with a book, you can lead viewers or readers around by the nose. Mm-hmm.
Because so, they can
literally only imagine what you're describing, and they can try to infer other stuff, but just because you omitted it doesn't mean that you can necessarily infer things.
Yeah, I agree. Because you can describe a scene where the character knows about their surroundings. They're sure. Like, I can hear the wind blowing, and yeah. I can hear the footsteps.
But you can also describe three of the people at the table and say there may be some other ones. Or you can just start by describing three and then say, oh, and there were some more. I didn't get it out of telling you because he was interrupted. But that works in a book, and it does not work in a movie.
What about, like, this is something we kind of passed over, but, like, comics. Well, this is something maybe we can talk about a different day, but how comic books do that type of thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, I know that Walking Dead, the way I describe Walking Dead to someone is a lot of dialogue sparsed with very violent and intense scenes.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the comic book is.
Yes. And that's difficult to pace.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of the times I wish the show were more like that, where, well, and I guess it is in the way the show can be like that. And I feel like that's one of the fallings of that show for me is that it becomes too boring. And I'm like, they didn't do a good enough job of translating what the comic did well to what the show should do well.
And again, they just
tried to do a verbatim media transfer.
And that may also be an aspect of, that media, the media differences.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying it is that it's like they comics, were like, we comics, think we I can
think,
do this.
I think
we,
comics can get away with a lot because it's freeze frame, freeze frame, freeze frame, freeze frame. Yeah. And so the pacing is sort of self-paced.
And people are really, really wary about this Sandman thing that HBO is doing because the art in Sandman is done so well that people are read it for that, you know.
That Neil Gaiman,
and
right?
Yeah. You're talking about trying to translate this like iconic art style to something that a lot of people don't think can actually be done in a show. And Saga, the reason, or is it Brian K. Vaughan wrote Saga, and the people who illustrated Saga did so in such a way that they wrote it and illustrated it in such a way that they didn't want it to ever be taken to a show.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit like hipstery, but they did it in such a way that it would be extremely difficult to translate into a television show.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to have their own type of media. And
I'm not familiar with a lot of you. I haven't read or...
That's, well, it's, that's fine.
But what I can say is that sounds script. Douchey.
It was
fine.
I mean,
do what you're going to do, but yeah, I feel like that's... I don't know. I feel like that's a little rude, but I can tell you of a couple examples where people have done that. Fight Club. What's his name? Polnick?
Polnick?
Whatever it is. Yeah. He said you could never make a movie out of that. And then he met with the guys who were doing Fight Club, and he was like, okay, you
And then they made a comic book about Fight Club 2.
Which is even weirder that he would allow that, whatever. Another fine example, Sin City. Frank Miller specifically said, there's no way you could make this. And then if, for those of us who have seen Sin City,
everyone,
go watch Sin City right now. They showed him, they filmed the first part before the credits, the cold open. They filmed that with their own money just to pitch the idea to him. And he saw it and was like, okay, let's do it. And so, like, that's a fine example of you're winning someone over.
Or the opposite, which is RoboCop 2.
Oh, okay, I was going to say 300.
Which is Alan Moore. Alan Moore did RoboCop, or who was it? Frank Miller did RoboCop, I think, too, didn't he?
I don't know.
Joe, you don't know that?
I did not, actually.
I think Frank Miller, or somebody was involved in the RoboCop 2 who had written the comic, or the stories, and they were like, this is fucking terrible.
There was a RoboCop comic?
I think so, yeah.
I thought that was a movie.
Did it?
No, actually, the comic came out before the movie did.
Yeah.
That I did know.
Well, so then you got one good movie and one bad movie with it, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, well, as we're wrapping up, did we touch on what you were thinking of in terms of the
difference? Yeah, we definitely hit a lot of stuff. I think that was the thing is, it definitely, there is a difference, and people who don't understand that or want to see exactly something translate, I feel sorry for them because I don't think that they're ever going to be happy.
I would say that if you see a comic, a book, a movie, and a TV series of all of the same thing that of a story that you love, I would say try and appreciate the actual differences of the ways they can tell that same story but in different means.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're hitting on here, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that there's a lot to be said for the beautiful scenery you can get from a movie that's not going to be the same as the beautiful scenery you make up in your head, and those go both ways.
And appreciate it, instead of getting so pissed off about what's not happening, appreciate the things that do, right? So, that's it, everyone.
This is Kendrick.
Thanks for listening, Kyle.
And Joe.
Talk. Go fuck yourself.
I didn't say it this time.